Welcome, this is Dave. Who all is joined?
Hi, Dave. It's Deb.
This is Beth?
Yep, Deb.
Well, I didn't know you were going to be able to attend. I thought you were doing a presentation in Echelon, which I envy.
No, that's a different Deb, Dave.
Oh, Deb, I'm sorry. I misheard you. I thought you said Beth. Deb, how are you?
I'm really good. How are you, Dave?
Well, great. I had we have a somewhat of a compromised connection. How's everything going for you, Deb?
Well, things are going really fine. I have my headsets on, my voice headphones. Is that, you think, the problem?
You sound better right now. You sound better than the first greeting. So yeah, that's better.
Okay.
Whatever you did, don't move. Okay.
Don't move it.
Right. Yeah. You're right. We'll do a check-in in just a minute, an update of the commitment from the last group, and then share a success story of something big or small that you've done since the last group. But who else has joined us?
Dave, Carolina.
Carolina, welcome. I'm going to get you to introduce yourself in just a moment.
I was going to say if it would be okay with you, we left that for next time because I'm driving and I could have a bad connection, or also
okay.
I just don't want to be focusing on what I'm saying, just listening to you guys.
All right, we'll do that then. That's fine.
And I
have
to leave you by 12 as well. So
very good.
Like
excellent.
There, really.
Okay, super.
Thank you.
And who else spoke at the same time?
Shelley?
Shelley, welcome. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. We'll get you to do an introduction in just a moment.
Okay.
Who else has checked in?
Hi, this is Sharon.
Sharon, welcome.
Hi, this is Kay.
And Kay, welcome. Welcome. Anyone else checked in? As soon as we are all here, we'll launch. Okay. Let me mention, due to a combination of unexpected family situations and moves, including to Europe, a couple of our members have had to suspend active involvement. And what we have been from the waiting list, let me ask anyone who's on a cell phone to mute *6. Okay?
Okay.
A mute, *6. Great, thanks. There's some, we have a couple of new people from a waiting list who I want to briefly introduce themselves, and I'm going to send around bios and pictures of our current group when we have them all. So let's do that first. I'm going to ask for the introduction, and then we'll do a check-in. Kay, are you here? Would you introduce yourself? Okay, from Canada. Okay, we'll. My, I know Shelley's here. Shelley, go ahead and introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Shelley. How are you? I'm in Santa Monica. And do you want a quick bio, Dr. Dave?
Absolutely. Yeah, just a brief overview, and then what you might most want to get out of in our interaction in the mastermind.
Okay, I am a wellness, family, divorce, child coach in Santa Monica, California, in Los Angeles. And I work with families in conflict and families of high means and success in conflict, trying to ground themselves. What I'd love from this group is a continuation of being stimulated and growing. And I find that new information is like fertilizer for me, especially when it's the right information, like Dr. Dave's. So I want to continue to grow.
Well, welcome. And I'm going to have to add something because Shelley is a little bit modest. She is a former successful actress and formerly, actually currently an author and working on some things. So I look very much forward to your participation, Shelley, and I'm really excited that you moved from the waiting list to active status, mm-hmm. off the bench and onto the playing field. So, so welcome.
Thank you.
Let me do one more check-in. Has Kay McConney arrived?
Yes, I'm here, Dave.
Welcome. How are you?
I am fine. I had a problem with my muting.
Oh, okay.
I have to say, Dave,
I can understand that you would have a problem muting. So, welcome, and it's great to have you. Would you tell the group a little bit about you? I also want to mention Kay not only has moved from the bench to the playing field, but she is our expert content contributor next time on developing an executive coaching firm. So I look forward to that. But she's part of us now. Go ahead, Kay.
Well, hi, everyone. I have to say I listened to your first two sessions that I missed, and it sounds like this is the happening group to hang out with on Friday mornings. And I'm a certified coach. My company is called Executive Minds, and we work with entrepreneurs, business owners, and executives from all sectors, public, private, and nonprofit sectors. And we build their capacity to turn talent into profit and teams into fully engaged partners. We do that through executive training, executive and business coaching, and through consulting. And I head the coaching practice, Executive Minds Coaching. And what I want for this group is success that goes on for as long as we want it to, however we define success for ourselves. And I suppose there's the self-interested side as to what is it I want from the mastermind group. I would say four things, and all four are centered on growth and fun. I have a mentor coach who said to me, if I'm not having fun, I'm probably doing it not the right way. And that would be a David Kruger. And for me, what I want from this group is peer support. I would like a peer support community where I can share and I can grow as a coach and help others do the same. I am looking for a safe place to examine my business mistakes and to brainstorm solutions. And equally so, I think I'm looking for a soft place where I can free fall from some unrefined ideas until I can land on some more structured plans. I am thirdly looking to expand my resource pool of preferred coaches. We are a coaching firm, and I would like to be part of that resource pool for others if they would consider me worthy. And I'd also like, finally, to have fun learning and getting to know all of you as colleagues. That's it for me, Dave.
That's great, Kay. After that, I'd sign up. That sounds terrific. Thank you very, very much. Very, very well formulated and well said, and welcome. And you can hear from both of our new contributors, participants, how excited I am that they're joining our group. Just a note before we move into our check-in, we have two people who have signed up for the hot seat. We have 2 to 3 open hot seats, so think about how you would like to use them. Beth is away. She's doing a retreat of her own in Echelon, so be thinking about what you'd like to do for the hot seat. So for a check-in, let's start with from last month, from last mastermind group, from your commitments, and then what kind of success story, one thing big or small, that you've also had since the last group. Who would like to start? I have notes about your commitments, and as your commitment specialist, I will not let you get away without reporting in. So if you want to volunteer, go for it. Sharon, you mentioned you jumped in last time first, so you want to bring us up to date.
Sure. I'll be honest. I have not looked at my what I wrote down for the commitment, but I know that my commitment right now is finishing my doctorate that I'm working on and staying healthy. I was really struggling with some what turns out to be very serious health issues, thyroid shut down, you know, all kinds of issues. And thanks to your recommendation of meditating regularly throughout the day, et cetera, My health has improved. I'm not out of the woods yet, but a variety of things I'm doing, I'm slowly getting my energy back. And I will say, I haven't been able to do anything else besides work on my courses and work on my health, because there's no other time left in the day. I often go to sleep at like 3 a.m. just because I have to meet deadlines. But in the process of doing this last month, I've had to, for health reasons, completely change my diet, which means, and I can't eat out anymore. So I can't, and I can't eat prepared foods. My diet is completely organic paleo. And so I've literally had to learn how to cook in my spare time. I've learned how to cook my own foods. Completely changed my diet, completely changed, you know, all the lifestyle things. And it's been hard, but it's definitely been worth the effort. So although that might not have been on my list, it was something I had to do to survive. And happy to say, I've survived a month now. I'm really happy about that.
Thank you very much. That's huge. The couple of things that I had that you mentioned were about acupuncture and younger next year, but it sounds like you accomplished what you were seeking in a different route. So congratulations and thanks for the update. That's great.
You're welcome.
Lisa, what you got?
I'm here. I remember my promise. I do. And I changed my mind. We were talking last month about impression management, and I said I was going to coin a new word, but I decided not to. Because in this last month, what I've learned is that impression management is such a great conversation starter that it has shocked me beyond what I had expected. Everybody knows what an impression is. Everybody knows what management is. And there's been little explanation, but the reaction has been every time intrigue, because I've tested it. Anybody I run into said, what do you do? And I told them, I said, I'm in impression management. I called myself an expert, thinking I had enough expertise in my past and present that I could feel comfortable in saying so. And I knew that if I wanted to go to somebody who touted themselves an expert, if they were in fact one, I'd be okay with that too. So there's been no resistance to the word expert, and I know some people get a little funky about expert and guru, but I'm okay so long as they can back it up. So I stuck with it, and it's amazing when you know where you're going, it's so easy to go that way. And doors are opening up left and right in this vein, and I am thrilled. So my promise to coin a new phrase, I reneged on it. I'm keeping it as it is, and it's working out great. The other win I can say is, remember on the beginning of this class I told you all about my experience with my son in his hockey locker room, and I just got an email last week from the director of the league that has asked me to present a program to all of the coaches for all the teams in the league and make the service available to them all. So that would be not part of dues. Each team would have to accept or reject based on their own preferences, but I have a feeling that with the story of my son's team's victories in the last year, that a fair amount of them will opt in at some point. So I'm pretty optimistic about it. It was a good month.
It was. Thank you, and congratulations. And I think that you did a very wise thing in listening and remembering the feedback you got last month when we brainstormed. Impression management is it. I think you nailed it, and it sounds like it's working for you. And that's always the bottom line. Does it work? So that's terrific.
Yep.
Thanks. Great update. Deb, what about you?
Well, I've made a lot of progress, not as much as I had hoped, but I always tend to bite off more than I can chew. Worked on both of my blogs this month. Talked to some people about my name title. I went ahead and I had registered some names and decided they were too generic. So gone ahead with my yourhealthmom.com, getting that up, building the log from ground up. I did use Odesk, as recommended, to outsource my logo, which is almost finished for the one. I've been really struggling with my other one. And I know everybody said I should probably do one at a time instead of trying to launch two blogs at the same time. So I'm struggling with not watching them both at the same time, because the one I think I'll make some money on, and that would be my coaching one-on-one or teleseminars. I think I've made a lot of headway. I've been doing my studying, you know, in addition to running my other businesses and everything else I have going on. I feel a lot more confident with my skills as far as being a coach. I continue to train and learn everything I can about that in my spare time, going on the 10,000 hours equals a professional or expert. I'm happy to be a part of this group. I'm really thrilled about our two new members. And I think that was what I said I was going to do, right, Dave? Did I forget something that I didn't mention?
You were looking at finishing your blog and setting up with AWeber. That was the primary thing you mentioned, yeah.
Okay, so
look at the work balance things, and I know you're signed up for a hot seat to look at a specific aspect of that today. So that's great, and it sounds like what you're in a quandary about is related. So maybe we can address that as well.
Okay, thank you, Dave.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. Has Debbie arrived? Haven't heard from her yet. She is going to be traveling, and she was thinking she might be able to join us, but it may be iffy. So we'll hold off until we hear from her. Sue, what you got? Is Sue here? Okay, what about Yana? Has Yana arrived? All right. I will check back in for those two, because I think I know they were planning to be here. One thing that Debbie suggested is, and I wanted to see what you guys thought about this, instead of Facebook, in order to get more of an exchange and more of an ongoing process and a continuity of feedback and comments about me building, having my IT guy build a small forum on my website that would be open and accessible only to our group. Would that be preferable to you more than the
yes.
confidential Facebook?
This is Shelley. I think yes. I don't trust
okay.
Facebook.
Okay. Have any of you had experience with like a small forum on a website? Okay, any other
I
votes?
Have.
Any other?
Yeah, this is at least I have. What would it do differently for us than Facebook, Dave?
It would be more private. It would be accessible only through the website and only to members. And even though the Facebook now is accessible only to our group and it's confidential, I notice in other groups whenever I post something that is just for a specific group, it appears in my Facebook. So I had to question the first time, is this really confidential? And the answer is yes,
mm-hmm.
but... And it may be easier access where you just click a link that you keep. I thought it was an interesting suggestion, and it could be even more private and more accessible. So I'll be happy to get my guy to build something. If any of you have any experience or want to do that or want to try it, I'll be happy to get him to build that.
With Drayton last when I did his executive class years ago, and he had a little forum set up. But if privacy is the issue, then it makes sense. But if initiative is the issue, then no matter what, it depends on why people are not participating. I mean, again, if somebody's concerned about privacy and this solves a problem and that increases involvement, then sure, go ahead. But it's not going to make anybody go on or off any more regularly than they do at this point, because Facebook is super accessible if people have an account. So
that's true. And Debbie's other comment was that we could post articles or papers or something and get running comments on it, that it would be easier to do there and more accessible to post various things that might be of value to the group.
Okay.
And it might be something that instead of sending each of you an attachment, I could post there, and it would be easier to comment and do cross comments and cross discussion about something, especially if we had a lively topic. It's far easier to get cross discussion going in a forum, and that might enhance the participation and interest and benefit to everyone.
Okay.
Jay?
Yes.
Carolina, yes, I would vote for the forum versus the Facebook.
Okay.
Just because I feel like Facebook, if I go to Facebook, I get distracted with going to everything else in Facebook. And so
yeah.
I avoid Facebook as much as I possibly can.
Okay.
So, yes, I would vote for the forum.
Okay.
And this is Sharon. I also avoid Facebook, and I thought it was just me. So I'm actually happy to hear that I'm not the only one that gets completely distracted. It's such a time sink that, and I guess it's a skill I need to learn how to develop, is how to do what I need to do and not get distracted. But quite frankly, right now, I just don't have any more time to take on any more learning projects. And I find Facebook incredibly overwhelming. I must be on the autistic spectrum because I'm completely overwhelmed. And I do have experience, by the way, in answer to your question, working with discussion forums. My classes are completely online, and everything is through, and we can even do attachments. Everything is through the Blackboard software. And I'm fine with that because it's focused on the topic at hand, the course. But Facebook is just completely overwhelming.
Okay, well, we definitely don't want to keep you up past 3 a.m. So it sounds like we have a consensus then about doing that. And I will get Bill on that and send it around to you guys as soon as possible. Any other business aspects or anything to discuss before we move to our first hot seat?
Dave, hi, it's Jan. I just want to say I'm sorry I'm a little late.
Welcome.
I had an important, phone call, so I'm sorry about that. So.
Well, let's do a check-in with you. From last time, any commitment and your best success from the last month? Go ahead and do a check-in with us, and I'm glad you're here.
Oh, good. Thank you. Well, interesting things are happening. So I actually got a girlfriend who wants to be my partner with the kids project. So that's great. And we are going to be talking about raising funds for, startups next week with somebody from San Francisco. So we're placing in that. We're having some people interested joining us. One of them won a Nobel Prize for environmental studies. So it's
this
exciting.
This is your nonprofit.
We are gonna do it as a profit. We want to do it as a profit. At this moment, we have a consultation next week about it with this startup. It basically helps startups to raise funds and awareness and everything else. So after that, we will decide if it's going to be profit or non-profit, but I'm leaning towards profitable, 99%. And it's just exciting when I want to say one thing. When you alter your belief system and you really focus, you really narrow your focus on certain things and you believe in them, you don't put any doubts and you don't put any worries, it's amazing how the right people appearing at the right time. It's just like you're moving on. You keep going and everything is happening effortlessly. I don't want to say effortlessly, but it's smoothly. It's smooth. It's just right in the place. And I really believe it's the belief system, and you alter it. And when you believe in something, the people start believing it as well, which is amazing. It's my observation with me and my clients as well. The same is happening with my clients who I'm coaching. So That's great. So that was on the KISS project, and then I got a proposal. Well, it's at the beginning, but I met the CEO. He's interested in my coaching. He's interested in business coaching, and I'm going to put it as a hot topic, like we were talking about, Dave, early in the email. And that was very interesting as well, because about a week before that happened, I thought, oh, maybe I should update my website. You know, I should take out the losses. You know, I coach people with losses. And I should put there the business coaching as well, or, you know, remove that and just switch to that. And guess what happened? It happened without me even switching it. I already attract clients who, you know, who's interested in business coaching. So.
Well, terrific. Thanks for the update. And congratulations on what you're up to. That sounds great.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, Yanni, you're first down for
the
hot seat. So you want to do a brief overview of what you'd like the group to brainstorm and focus on with you.
Yes. So I have never done business coaching, but so I met the CEO, which I mentioned before. He's managing, I would say, 100 people altogether. He has 10 senior managers who actually, like, he coaches them, and then those people have other team underneath them. So when we met, he was very interested in what I do, and I told him, you know, the background of how I started with you, Dave, and, you know, a little bit of brain and how our brain works and this and that and that and that. And he was like, this is actually, you know, great, because I could use that for building our team. His focus in the business coaching is, like, he has a problem with the ego a lot in his team, and he knows it's not healthy for building good business when you have egocentric people and then they're supposed to coach other people. So he wants to invite me to this presentation, you know, with all his employees, which is about 100 people, to observe, you know, how he does what he does. And so my question would be, first, what I was thinking, coaching for him, and then helping him how to figure out how to coach his employees. Then he mentioned something about boot camp, and for 2 days, you know, he even mentioned the price. I said, it's not about the money. It's about, I really don't see results in 2 days in people, because the brain needs the time to actually switch, right, to narrow pathway into new and adjust the belief system. So I said to him, I really believe, like, this would be more of an ongoing thing, so I want to see what you all think about it. And
okay, so Yana, then to interrupt you, to crystallize your questions to the group to brainstorm.
Okay.
It's
okay.
About
coaching him,
and is it about developing your own executive coaching practice?
No, it would be more so about the strategy. When you're approached by somebody, okay, what can you do for me in the business? How can I help you? So where do I start? Do I start with him as a CEO, or do I jump into the management, or do I jump into the employees, or do I do all of it? Like, what would be the first start? What is the best offer for him?
Okay. And to have one more clarifying question, did he want to engage you for coaching individually?
Yes.
Was that the first request?
Well, here's what he was like brainstorming with me, like, what can we do together? And he goes, oh, I would love you to help me, you know, on this and that. And then we were talking about how he does the presentation with his employees and, you know, what kind of question he's asking. So I think there's like also questions which not work well for, you know, the employees to get the answer. So I was telling him, you know, of course I can help you with your employees, I can help you with this, I can look at the structure. So it wasn't that he was asking me, can you coach me? Can you help me and my team? So he was basically asking me, how can you help the whole business, about 100 people?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's open it up for feedback. Who has input to that?
Yana, would you clarify what kind of problem the team is having that he's thinking about? I missed part of what you said.
He has about 10 senior managers, which he refers 6 of them, were very, egocentric, and they're creating a lot of problems. There's a lot of jealousy. There is a lot of, just like lower emotion, which is really not leading towards productivity, right? Then you focus on those problems versus focusing on the productivity. So that's what he was referring to, and he wants to increase, it's not about he wants to increase the money. He understands if the team is not healthy inside, you cannot build a good business on the outside as well. He was very much aware of, if I'm not in a good state of mind, if the workplace is in not good state of being there, that affects me and that affects the productivity and that affects the business, the whole business.
Yana, this is Kay, what is the culture within the organization?
What is what?
What is the culture within the organization?
What do you mean culture? Like, what is the background? It's a financial...
No, the organizational culture. What kind of a... how would you describe what the values within the organization are and how the people who work in it live those values?
Well, I don't know the people. I have met him, and I know another senior manager. That's about it. So I don't really. That's the thing that he invited me for. This it's like a whole day presentation, and they play golf. So I actually see these people in actions, and I see between the lines what's happening in that team.
Mm-hmm.
So I at this moment I cannot say what's happening within the team. Just only what he said to me, and that's his observation, right? That's his, opinion.
Kay, one thing that I don't know. Kay, have you had a chance to listen to our expert content contributor from our first group, Art Wilson, who did
that? Would have been Art, yeah.
Yes, on facilitation.
Yes, group facilitation.
Yeah, because that sounds like an ideal kind of application here, but I'm very interested in what your thoughts are, because you've had experiences like this and have done this before. How would you take it? Don't be hesitant just to jump in and say what you think, because that's exactly what we do here.
I think that the first question that was asked, I can't remember, by one of our other colleagues here was a very important one. In this situation, I would first try to establish where's the pay. What's the problem that they're trying to address?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not yet sure if I get a grasp on what is the problem and where's the pain. And I would also want to find out where would he want to start first. And so that we get a feeling, because it seems as if this problem is a large problem, and
mm-hmm.
you really would just want to hone in on, okay, where do you want to start first? And I imagine that will be, where's the biggest pain, and where do you think you can get the biggest benefit for the people? I would think that you would start with an inquiry within the organization first, mm-hmm. understand what the needs are, do a needs assessment. Until you understand what it is they need, until you understand where the real pain is, until you understand where it is that they would want to go, then it is going to be hard to position your intervention or your coaching assistance. And so I think after that part is established, what are the needs, where's the pain, what's the problem to be addressed, then you can sit with him and work out now, how are we going to go at this? And it may be that you facilitate a group to determine how you go at it, or it may be that you choose to work with the head honcho and you all start with a plan that phases in the input of others.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, you will know what kind of engagement then, what specific engagement you need to make at that level. So that's how I would do those three steps. First, establish what the need, the problems are. Then, in fact, start to sit down and look at where a plan could come from for
mm-hmm.
you to work together on that, whether that plan comes from just the head honcho or from the head honcho with input from the others. And then, of course, then you face whatever intervention you would want to make at that time.
Mm-hmm.
This is Sharon. I have a slightly different take, and I think everything you just said is great, but you're assuming that everybody in the organization, including the head person, is rational and objective. In my experience, and I've had to lead, 100 people and also be in part of a larger organization, everything starts from the top. Leadership rolls downhill. So whatever problem the leader is having in the organization, there's something that the leader is doing or not doing that is contributing to the problem. The other thing is people say one thing and they do something else and they don't even realize it. So just talking to the leader, the leader is going to say, oh, the problem is these other people. They don't, they've got ego problems. You talk to the other people, and they'll say, oh, no, it's somebody else. When you actually see them interact over time, then you'll see what's really happening. And it's probably a problem starting at the top.
So you would recommend... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So you would recommend what I was thinking first, start with him?
Well, you definitely have to start with him because he's got the vision.
Well, of course. But I'm talking about coaching, meaning not,
coaching, I think the coaching is definitely, you're going to be coaching him. And certainly until you see the entire organization, you may have to do the 360-degree evaluations and all of that, but but I think you're ultimately, if you want to change an organization, you have to coach. It's got to come from the top because fix all the problems at the bottom. But if he's creating the problems, they will keep coming back.
Mm-hmm. Now here, okay, maybe I should fill you also on this. That was my instinct as well, that actually I would start with him. I would like to start with him. That was my instinct. And then he has underneath him, like I said, the senior managers, which is 10 of them, and then they have underneath them groups. What happened, he is new to this business about maybe 8 months. So he said, when I jumped in, I had to delete a lot of people. I had to let a lot of people out because that was just an unhealthy environment. So he's in a process of rebuilding it. I don't think it's his problem, but it's coming from the problem before. Like he was mentioning, like I had an assistant. She was actually rude to me because the previous CEO was, letting things like that. He was managing the whole team differently, and I guess that was more like about the hunger and peer pressure and lower emotions and jealousy, and that was the business was built on that, I guess, like stomping on each other. He wants to bring more the teamwork, the awareness, the, like the B working team, right? So,
right.
I have something to add when you're ready.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay. It really sounds a lot like the families I work with, which I approach as if they are companies. And a lot of the parents are, my daughter's bulimic, my son is this, can you help them? And there's a sense of, I don't want to take responsibility here. You do it for me. And what happens is when I get the privilege of working with each member of the family, that supposedly parents, and seeing how all the dynamics works, it usually, as you said, leadership starts at the top. So even though that person is inheriting old problems, even hearing them say to you, help my team, is almost, it sounds like you could empower that person to lead his team and then have it trickle down.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Lisa. You know, I had a client, I actually still have them. I've watched over a very lengthy period of many years, 5 changes of marketing leadership. They were still all supervising the same marketing teams, and there were a lot of different personalities among them. Now, you mentioned these 6 or so are egocentric. So if you have all chiefs and no Indians, there could be conditions for a lot of competition, fighting for turf, mastery, leadership, and all. And with that type of conflict, that can be tough to a tough dynamic to inherit if he's only been there 8 months. So it will be critical for him to really set very, very firm boundaries. And I know from, like, this client I'm using as an example, some of the leaders who were in place clipped wings instantly. And others, I think I mentioned them before to you, so I said if at the meetings the team had popcorn to throw, they would. It was like a circus. And I found that the presence of the person running the show dictated whether those dynamics became messier or cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't change them in that those people didn't necessarily change, but he sort of reeled them in. So there may be 2 issues here. One, how he can come off as the leader and say, look, this is going to happen. And an example I can give you of that is I was an external consultant to this organization and still am, never on their books. But they used to call the team members, one person in particular used to call me a vendor. And this VP of marketing said, I'd like to stop you right there. You know, Lisa's been with our organization for 12 years, and I would like you to call her our partner or our consultant, but not a vendor. And I just joked around. I said, that's so great because I always feel like you need to put a quarter in my mouth and I'm going to spit out advice like a vending machine. So with that very simple statement, and he didn't embarrass her, he just created respect for my contribution. It felt good for me. And this woman said, oh, okay, because he didn't grill her or make her feel badly. But he put a fact on the playing field, didn't make it personal, but it set a very important tone, and everyone else followed suit. So you can address it from the perspective of this leader, how he can gain better control, and also the group themselves. When I have a group like this, I ask questions. It's a very specific set of questions in print, individually to start, and then I'll interview them individually later, and then we'll assemble as a group. Because in order for you to get the information that you need to relay back to the leader and so that you can coach and even advise appropriately, if you get answers from these individuals, you'll start to see maybe patterns or the same comment about a certain individual. So by going in cold, it might be a crapshoot. But to do it in a very method, like with a method to your madness, where you're trying to compile orderly data and then looking for patterns and consistencies and inconsistencies, or even assess the way certain people answer, you may find out who's the bigger chief and who's the lesser chief. You can even determine a hierarchy by the way they respond or not respond. So hope that helps.
Okay, let me try to synthesize the input so far, and then I want to move the question to Kay for a practical, what would you do? Because it sounds like what each of you have suggested, in a way, even Shelley's suggestion, analogous to families, is to do work with the leader, that first the leader has to really be a leader and be in charge of a system, of a culture, of an organization, and then to do an assessment of where things need to be within the hierarchy, beginning with the leader, and perhaps do a facilitation then of the 10 managers to have them act together cohesively once you know more about the organization, the culture, the structure of it, and to see what the problems are, what the needs are organizationally after you've done that from the perspective of the CEO. Now, is that an accurate read first? And Kay, if that's what you would do practically, what would you do next?
I think I would start with where I am invited in. I think it's difficult to impose yourself in an organization at a point where the head honcho who's making the decision right now and can probably write the check, where that person did not invite you in. So I would start where you're invited in. And it seems as if the gentleman you were talking about, Yana, invited you in at a particular point.
Mm-hmm.
Once you are in at that point, you can see what the real issues are.
Mm.
What's real, what's not. So I would start where I'm invited, see what the real issues are, do your own assessment based on your conversations. And then the fourth step would be to do a facilitated group meeting.
And that fits with what you're doing with the leader is that you are facilitating that leader to lead. You are developing that capacity and that function, not in functioning for the leader by doing something the leader needs to do by jumping in and starting with meeting with managers and facilitation, because you'll then be able to see if the facilitation with managers needs to be another person. I mean, as Drayton talked about last time, as Kay will be telling us about next time, you have here a virtual firm. You probably know people who can be called in to, you can helicopter people in to do a specific function. If somebody needs to do a 360 or an evaluation or a facilitation, if you decide not to do that yourself or if it would further the work that you're doing with the CEO to do that and enhance that, then you have a virtual firm. So that's always a possibility. But how does this plan of action and strategy of thinking about it feel to you, Yana?
Well, that's a very important thing that, you know, what we're saying here, like it's a different opinion, it's a different point of view. But what I really instinctively felt is like I would like to start with him to see where he is at, where, you know, what he's doing. And that's why I want to go and observe him and observe the whole group, the presentations, and then playing golf, and then to see how the relationships are working there. He wants the people to be a little bit more outside of box thinkers. He wants them to be more brought together. So he was asking if I could coach the senior management. And I said, of course, we can do it individually or a group. I prefer individually, I would say. That's my instinct. And with him, in my opinion, I should still be coaching him as well. So I know the both sides of the ship.
I'll tell you my bias and my experience in this, and
okay,
I'm interested in other perspectives. Whenever I work individually with one person, at a senior executive level, I don't work with other people in that executive suite because there are often conflicting interests. There's often confidential information. There are cross purposes. And my goal to have 100% immersion in the success of my client means that I might be compromised if there's somebody else in that executive suite that I'm also coaching. Now, that's a particular perspective. It's the perspective that I see myself as the confidential secret weapon of that person who I'm working with. And for a similar reason, I wouldn't jump in and start doing assessments of other people, even at a golf event, because I want the perception, I want the perspective of the person I'm working with. My perception may or may not be the same, and I don't want to confuse that with the perception of the person I'm working with, at least in the beginning, because I think that would dilute things. Because if we had different perspectives, well, guess who wins, but guess who you have to coach in terms of being the leader and being an effective leader functioning in the full capacity of that. So this person, I believe, you're going to have to watch out for wanting to delegate things that shouldn't be delegated, wanting other people to function for him in ways that he needs to take ownership for and function himself, because he's asking you to jump in and do some of his functioning from the beginning, and that's a danger sign. That also mitigates toward working exclusively with him confidentially and ensuring him of that so that he can truly bring anything he needs to you, including the mishaps and missteps and the questions and the uncertainties that he has in being a true leader with others, and you can help him develop that. And teaching him in terms of how the brain works and, you know, seminar kind of things, that's not going to be most helpful. The most helpful things, I believe, would be the learning and doing, and you can bring in all that you know and look at the principles and help him have principles to operate. Because I'm not sure, for example, if a facilitation is needed or if that team of managers simply needs a training about developing a mentor program, and you have you have access to that too. That's something within our group. So I'm not quite sure what the next step is, but you're going to find out once you begin to work with this person, and you're going to be able to make a more effective call and a more specific call about what's next when you work with him, because I think you and he have a good deal of work to do. Now, I'm interested in other perspectives, and Kay, does this sound consistent with your approach or different?
It sounds exactly what I said. Seems very consistent with the approach that we have taken. I say that because in situations, as you know, Dave, we work with companies that after we go in and assess, we determine, no, you don't need coaching yet, you need training.
Yeah.
And then there are times when we determine, no, you don't need training at this stage, you do need coaching, or that perhaps a facilitated group is best before we go to either one of those. And so, yes, I absolutely agree with you. It's very consistent with the approach we take.
Okay, I wanna because of time and to move to our next hot seat, I want to do a wrap on this. Yana, is this helpful in terms of your next plan? You can always bring this back to the group because I suspect that there's going to need to be some additional brainstorming about what's next after this step of what's next. So are you okay with this for right now and feel like you have a game plan?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
It's clear in my vision. Mm-hmm. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thank you for bringing this up, and thanks for all the input. I learned something, and I think it's really interesting to see how this evolved and to have different perspectives. And the analogies that we heard, like for families and other kinds of systems, I think is really interesting. So thanks very, very much.
Thank you.
Dea, you had signed up for a hot seat. Would you do a synopsis of what you'd like our group to focus on?
All right. I'm kind of at a crossroad. I'm going to sell my machine shop business here, and I want to create a portable. Yeah, it is. I think it's the best for me. My whole point of coaching and mentoring was to start a new life for myself, and I wanted to build a portable business and generate the type of income that I've had over the past. I know a lot of you guys don't know this, but I've had several other businesses, and since I've been getting a divorce, I'm kind of rewriting the script of my life, which is where I came up with my name for my other blog, which after I talked to Lisa, she said that was too generic. And I agree with her because I got online and I looked. So my one blog is yourhousemom.com, and I'm targeting young women. And my other blog, which I want to build into an online business, and this is where I'm struggling, is targeted for more people our age, you know, maybe the 50s. I want it to be for both men and women. I want it to be for relationships and how they manage their relationships with themselves, with their money, and with their partners.
So coming up for a name that doesn't involve the word coaching, I kind of in the last month have eliminated the name coaching because I prefer to be referred to as a mentor. I do a lot of mentoring, have for many, many years, and that's where I'm struggling. Coming up with a catchy name for my blog, and that's what I want help with, and I want it to be a mentor. I mean, I heard one the other day that was really cute. It was shrinkforyou.com, and I looked it up, and it's targeted for men who have been in abusive relationships with women and how they didn't know it. And that's been one of my interests is in that type of, you know, relationship and helping people break out of them. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so you want the group then to brainstorm about the name for this blog and the name of this branch of your practice.
Right, something that would be catchy, that's not too generic. One that I was thinking about was mentorforyou.com. And I thought that would be pretty, but I don't know if it's too generic.
Sounds pretty generic. So are you wanting to specify something more like the relationship mentor or something that would really identify more of what you do?
Well, I want it to be on the, if it's going to be on the internet, I want it to, you know, go to the top, and I want it, I know we talked, you know, what Debbie Morley's, what was her blog was really interesting. The name was catchy. I mean, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But something that kind of stands out. I mean, something that catches your attention. Not, you know, rewrite the script of your life. But when I looked that up, it was like, that was everywhere. So I ruled that out.
Yeah. Debbie's, is she makes the rules.
Yeah, that's a neat little name. Something like that is what I'm trying to come up with.
Okay. Ideas.
This is Sharon. My first idea, I don't have a specific idea, but I guess I have some cautions. You know, the caution about the name that Debbie had was she got a lot of you know, be careful what you say. I mean, she makes the rules. She ended up with all these people looking for something that was not what
the BDSM group.
yeah. So, you know, you have to be careful. And I would just say on the word mentoring, I think it's a great word. Maybe it's just my experience, but when I think of a mentor, I almost always naturally think of in the business, you know, a professional mentor. I had a mentor when I was a naval officer. I had older naval officers senior to me mentoring me throughout my career. It never occurred to me that there could be a mentor on the personal side, but it sounds like you don't necessarily want to focus on business mentoring. So I would just caution you that if you don't want to get a lot of requests about setting up business mentoring, that you need to let people know you're not doing business mentoring or workplace mentoring.
Okay. Yeah, and this is Lisa. Even if you are a mentor, the fact is it doesn't need to be part of your name. That's really what you do. It's your title. So your company name needn't even include the word mentor. And the original one, I agree with Dave, it's way too – mentor for you could be anything. So are you going to address couples? I mean, you said themselves as well, but ultimately is it to preserve the couple?
No, I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in, and I would not rule out thinking in the terms of business. I have a lot of experience in that. But I would rather deal more one-on-one, like you were discussing, with working with the leader. In our last conversation, you know, the leader sets the tone and on the whole business, and I would just soon start there.
Now, I'm a little confused because I wonder if you're at cross purposes, because if you want to mentor relationships and do that one-on-one, you're creating a dilemma, because if somebody comes to you individually to work on a relationship, you can only work on the individual because that person only has a circle of concern in terms of the relationship, not a circle of influence. So if you want to actively address a couple, whether that's a management couple, a gay couple, someone about to get married, whatever the relationship is, if you want to be a relationship mentor, that's going to be two people, most likely, and not one person. So I think you may need to get specific about who exactly you want to work with and on what.
I think I am clear, and maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe the relationship isn't the good word. Maybe I'm thinking a person's relationship with themselves and their relationship to money and their relationship to them, to their inner core and their relationship and how they deal with their boss or their spouse.
Okay,
that
I'm a potential client, and I say, Deb, okay, wait, what's different from that than life coaching?
Than what?
Life coaching. You're describing a life coach. If I'm reading you or discussing with you, I want to know what you do uniquely well. What is specific to you? And you're sounding like a life coach. How am I going to know that you're the one for me?
I don't know.
Shelley, I have a comment. I really empathize with you because I went through this issue. I did not want to use the word life coach. I'm in Hollywood, and, you know, everything's very clickish here. It comes and it goes. And, you know, I was working with a family and working with an individual. And how I solved the problem is Shelley Leather, life coach, first of all, look at what comes up at the highest ranking. And life coach came up at a higher ranking. And I thought, you know what? That's what I'm doing. That's what this is. But then I created services, separate services, under Shelley Leather Life Coach. So I can have the service where it's Wise Women of Divorce or it's family, a family facilitator. And so I could have my niches with one person or a couple underneath the umbrella of life coach, and also legally, because I talk to a lot of therapists and lawyers, it helps to be able to operate under what is expected and legally known and not known about a life coach.
How do you spell your name so I can look that up on the internet?
It's S-A, that one's under works. Oh, there's two sites. There's the one that's under works that I am going to do the different services under, which is S-H-E-L-L-I, Leather, L-E-T-H-E-R. And then L-E-T-H-E-R. And then another, and then I just built a completely different website that it's going to link for a service that I have, which is Supervised Visitation Monitor. And because that's court-ordered and I'm dealing with, I'm going to link them both, but that I wanted it to be less about Shelley Leather Life Coach, about me, I'm dealing more with this family who has a court order, and I want the focus to be on healing their family and not like, oh, I'm this life coach coming in to take over. In that service, as the supervised visitation monitor, I'm there to observe and report and enforce. The reason I linked them, though, is because if somebody uses me as a monitor and I observe, then once they no longer have that court order, I can transition into a transition coach between the two families. Or I can specifically just work with one parent in their home on that parenting relationship. But I do empathize with what where you're going, I finally just gave in and said, this is what I am. And if it, and it's really about my service and my integrity. Yes, there's a billion life coaches,
mm-hmm.
but how many people, you know, be the best you can be at what you do in your niche, and then trust that that will carry you through that passion.
Thank you so much. You know, that's so funny because a week ago I decided, you know what, I'm just going to use my name.
Yeah.
And keep it simple. But my niece said to me, Aunt Deb, you're getting a divorce. What if you want to get remarried? And I thought, well, she does have a point.
This is your business name. This is your business name. It's not who you are as a remarried woman or this or that. This is who you are as an individual and a coach. And if you think about the future of your business, you can write a book. You can become a divorce coach. You can be a mentor. You can be, but it's your name that you are building upon.
Thank you. That makes it so much easier.
I think those three components that Shelly mentioned really incorporates the principles that Kay mentioned for any entry into an offering. What's the pain? What are the specific benefits and the specificity of what you do? Wise Women of Divorce, the Family Facilitator, Supervised Visitation Monitor, those three very specifically describe services, and they are speaking to specific issues of people that they're going to know exactly who they are and that you're speaking to them because the title says exactly what you're going to do to benefit them. So I think that's a really wise way to proceed. Other feedback for Deb?
If I can, yeah, hi Deb, it's me Anna again. So if I can, so when I was looking for a name of my business and I named it You Successful You, I really literally played around. I was putting words together. I'd choose, you know, different words. I'd put them on a different card. I was just playing around with it, like go outside of, you know, your mind and think about it. Like, I don't know if you already have a word which you would use, which you want to use, but you can combine them. You can really play, like you can even make a new word, like a catchy word. And when I came up with You Successful You, whoever I give my card and whoever sees my, you know, name goes, wow, this is a great idea. You Successful You. I mean, it's very catchy. It's very telling. What is it about that's really building and achieving success and maintaining success? And that's what all of my aim is. So, you know, when you think about how you want to name your business, think about the target, which you want to do, of course, but also in a way like that would influence people in a good way. Like the brain receives the word, like, you know, something positive, something empowering. So the people will get it catchy, like, oh, this is a good name. Unless you decide to go with your full name. I mean, I decided not to because it's like I want to build this as a brand, as an educational platform for many other things, and I have a, you know, like a big plans with it, and we can divide it into, I don't know, there can be built application, there can be built, you know, books and kids program and this and that. So that's why I choose You Successful You as a brand.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Deb, do you recall the brainstorming for a business name, the little document
yes.
that I sent around?
Yes, I do.
Okay. If you need that again, I'll be happy to send it around again, but it may be something just because I think Yana mentioned some of the principles of that or some of the ideas. So if you have any trouble locating that, I'll be happy to send it around.
Thanks, Dave. I've got it in my file. So
maybe the other girls.
I'll try it again. I will.
This is Debbie. Hello, everybody.
Hey, welcome.
Hi, Debbie.
How are you?
Hey, I've been here. I just hadn't chimed in because I came in the middle earlier, but. I wanted to suggest that you can create different products under your brand of you, right? And you can have really positive names. That's the one thing I learned from the She Makes the Rules is that you have to be careful. And so creating the brand under you primarily and then your product lines that you offer can be really positive as well. Because you want to attract positive clients. I attracted one that's full of problems and drama, and I realized, I need to reword, you know, my sales pitch or something, you know, to make sure that I attract the people who really want to make a happy life for themselves.
Thank you.
Plus, here's a functional issue about a business name. If it's too long, remember, most people are going to want to look up your business online, and they're going to expect that the name of your business is well, not too many letters. The rule of thumb for a business name that has the highest level of memorability is that it uses four or less letters. Now, that's not always possible to do, but try and stay close. Think about some of the most difficult business names you're trying to remember. If it's too many words, add .com to it, and people will forget it. So if you can try and keep it short and sweet, so that it's still, and that means no acronyms. If ABC coaching or whatever, people forget numbers and acronyms unless they're meaningful. They just are too generic and they lose their steam very quickly. So just watch for length and watch for too much of a departure from your real name for how you'll use it online.
Thank you.
Great.
Another idea, this is Debbie again. One of my favorite websites is called onepinky.com. And the lady, I believe her name is Laura, who started that, has a philosophy of you can love yourself if you start with just your pinky. You can look at your little pinky and just love it to pieces. And then you build from there on learning how to love and accept your whole self. And I keep going back to that as an ideal name when I think of other names, you know, for products or businesses.
Mm.
That sounds like a great place to start. Super. So, Deb, is this really getting you consolidated and going in a specific direction about informing you what to do next?
It did. I think I like the specificity of what I do. I like that. The services I'm going to offer under my name and being able to build out under it. Like Shelley said, I like that idea a lot. I like everybody's ideas, and I appreciate all their input. Thank you very much.
Okay, super. Well, we can do kind of a working break, but we have those are the only two hot seats who signed up for them. We have another time. We have an hour time between now and half past to do another hot seat. Has anybody thought of anything or would like to engage the group in a hot seat focus at this point?
This is Shelley. I actually have a thought, a possibility. You know, you were talking about only wanting the perspective of the one client as opposed to when you're coaching a relationship or a team. And this is something that I'm juggling and I'm in the middle of with different people, and I know it's going to work its way out. But when I work with the family, sometimes I'll come in, I came in with one with the mom and immediately then met with the dad and started, then they pulled me into the kids. And that's how I've worked in the past, very unconventionally, but getting the family to work, getting everyone to understand each other's perspective or knowing how to shift the other person's perspective by understanding where the other person is coming from. And so I actually was talking to some lawyers about how I deal with it on a confidentiality base, and they, first of all, I have people sign an agreement that mediators use in mediation. And we talk about, you know, like what's confidential and what's not. But it is a very, very slippery slope. So I understand, Dr. Dave, what you're saying when you have one person in the executive suite, because I feel like if I'm on the husband or the wife or if they're divorcing, if I'm on one of their team, I am their secret weapon. However, if this is a family that wants to separate but yet create a new bridge and some form of unity, then they don't want me on one person's team because I will help them get exactly what they want. They want me on both of their teams. But are you a mediator? Are you a facilitator? Are you a coach? I'm not sure if that's been created yet, what that is.
Is that the question you'd like to group the brainstorm about?
Yeah. What is that service, that scope of service, and how do you create appropriate guidelines and boundaries?
It's a great question, because each of those functions, mediator, facilitator, coach, and coach of whom, an individual, a system, a family, are all important, but different questions and different clients in some cases. So,
yeah, they're different families, and it's important to be clear. Yeah, so if that's of interest.
Okay, what do you think, group?
This is Debbie. That's an interesting scenario. I hadn't really thought about. I ran into some of it when working with a couple, and so far I've also used a pretty generic mediation agreement. That I don't ever disclose their confidences, I'm looking at the greater whole. But I also use, surveys and that kind of thing for additional information. But one of the things that I've created on Coach's Console is for the individual to email me and to answer questions each week. And then they're the only ones that get to see that and myself. The other person doesn't get to see any of that information. So I don't know if that's a tool that you could use in a situation like this. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
Shelley,
something
when you go into... Yep. Go ahead.
No. What was your question?
Well, when you go into an engagement, you define your client in a particular way. If your client is the individual, whether that's a mother or father, that's your client. If the client is a couple, then the relationship is your client. If it's the family, then the family is your client. Now, your question, I think, is interesting because it involves a shift. And if you go in with an individual, then that person is your client until maybe the partner comes in as your client, then it moves to the relationship. So it raises the question of whenever you work in a relationship, your client is the relationship, and there's no confidentiality within the relationship. You don't hold secrets one has or the other has. So you already have an alliance with somebody. How does that work when you add someone who you don't have an alliance with and shift the client perspective to be both?
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that?
Well, and that is the question. Something that I have been doing, because it's something I'm creating and experimenting in and seeing if it's even possible, is we have a rule that if there's something that they do not want shared, that they have to tell me that. And that beforehand, they both have to agree that if I work with the both of them and one of them has a personal, like something that is not for the group, that is their right to have that confidentiality. As long as, like, one of their sons were caught drinking. If it's something that is a danger and that needs to be shared, that they commit to me that they will themselves share it so that I'm not put in that situation. Because the relationship, the family's growth is, and prosperity is what we're focused on. But within that, I have, a dad who was having an outside relationship that the whole family knew about. My thing was, I don't want to know about that relationship. I won't work with you on that relationship. Your ex-wife knows about it. I won't work with you about that. And then for the wife, it was that she didn't know anything about their finances. So I directed her into, because her growth for the family, the entire family, is to become, to take her life back, to have power and awareness of her finances, of her children who are in trouble, and so, you know, going to the right therapist. So I encouraged her, as her growth, to meet with financial advisors and get a grasp of their money situation, and also to legally know what her rights would be if she were to follow through on the divorce. So if there's something that they confide in me that we know that is clear that it would be like putting fuel on a fire, then that's confidential. But if it's something that, like she says, I don't like the way he does this with my son, it makes me feel worried, she can't communicate that to him. But she says, will you help me with this with him? And I'll come to him and I'll say, this is an issue. Would you like to explore it? And the thing about that that makes it really work in the family is that she would attack him and his defenses would go up. But when it goes through me as a conduit, I can go to him and say, she'd like to know if you want to be on the same parenting plan. And he'll say, well, we don't see eye to eye. And I can say, well, I think maybe what she might be asking for is for you to help her see how this is a safe situation for the son. She merely is doing her role, playing her role as a mother by showing concern. We have a choice to encourage her and support her and make her feel safe, or we have a choice to shut her down and push her away. What would you like to do? And then we go back to our overall intention of this family is that they can separate and that everybody can grow individually to be their best. So it's complicated, but there are those few rules that I'm coming up with. If it fuels fire, you know, if it's about being vindictive, it's not my place. But if I have their permission and it's about helping the family move to a safer, more healing step, then it's something that I can share back and forth.
Okay, Shelley, at this point, would you restate your question to the group for us to brainstorm?
Okay, so my question is how do we separate or combine the role of facilitator, mentor, mediator, and coach? What boundaries and guidelines can be set up to be able to work with the moving group, a dynamic that complicated?
Okay, let's get some mastermind thoughts on that, because that question is very clear, and you restated it very clearly for us to focus on. I think it's a very good question, because I think it comes up in other settings as well. It comes up in working with inside or as an external coach to a company with executives. I think it's an important question to consider, and something that we'll deal with in one way or another with various clients.
I just a really quick question. Are you comfortable moving back and forth between those roles fairly seamlessly?
Do I? I do, and that's where these questions are coming up for me, is because I have this unusual gift to go into the middle of a bee's nest and to begin to bring their chaos and tension down, and then to help shift one side's perspective to understand the other party better, and then help them find, you know, and like Dr. Dave says, focus on the solution, not the problem. In divorce and family, people are focused on the problem. But by going in the middle and helping them shift their focus to solution, but then also understanding the quote-unquote enemy, that's when it seems that the anger starts to lessen and the healing, there it opens up a, it creates space for healing. So it is, it's something that I'm very attracted to and can juggle kind of seamlessly. I'm like really good in the fire, but I don't think there's many people in the fire, so I have to create these rules and boundaries and guidelines as I go.
Kay, from a perspective of overseeing your executive coaches and working in an executive coaching function, do you have any thoughts about this distinction and these boundaries?
In terms of the distinction between the mediator role and the role of coach and others, our transitions have often been between being the trainer, being the coach, and being the consultant. Contracts.
Okay.
So we
that sounds very analogous.
What do you mean?
Well, it sounds analogous in a way to mediator, facilitator, coach, to being a consultant, trainer, coach.
Yes.
So how do you address, in your domain, how do you address the boundaries trainer, coach, consultant? How do you think about it?
One, we deal with it through contracts, but I'll give you a perfect example. Last week, Monday and Tuesday, we did training. Capacity building training for a group in the Eastern Caribbean of nonprofit organizations. What we did is we broke the entire 2 days into training sessions, and then we stepped out of that role and we went into individual coaching sessions, and then we moved into group facilitation sessions. And we set very clear boundaries because we were able to do it with time. We were also able to do it with subject matter. And we actually used verbal cues when we moved from one position to the other. In other words, we said, we have now completed the training segment. We are now transitioning to coaching mode. Or we are now, so we did it. We use several different approaches in that specific example. We use time, we use topics, and we used verbal cues to help our people transition.
That is brilliant. And you know why, Dr. Dave? It's because that's what these families are missing, that once you give them these tools, when you're dealing with your children, when you're dealing with your marriage, when you're dealing with your finances, when you're dealing with your what you want for yourself, yet what is the higher good of the family, if to actually break it up into, okay, subject matter, this is, we are dealing with the family right now. We are dealing with how your personal best and taking care of your needs so that you can deal with your family. And I think just to, for me to get very, very clear and on paper about what we're doing right. It's like states of mind. This is the state of mind we're in right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Kay's approach would define a mindset as well as a mission, a context. So I can see that. Now you each know my secret, my criteria for inviting each of you to attend is that you got to be smarter than me. So now you're seeing how this works.
No, we just have a different perspective. It's just exactly like this. It's when you, it's like bringing science and meditation together right now. They're both, people have saturated in those separate fields, but then when you bring them together, you shift the perspective, which helps the other side understand a whole new world and then integrate it.
Mm-hmm. So true, Shelley.
I think. Absolutely. You're the facilitator.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the answer is
I sometimes think. I sometimes think. Well, you all the skills that you just mentioned are like tools in your shed. I know in my case, that let's say in my early days when I did lettering, I had a certain pen that I used for one thing and a brush for another, and hard edges and soft edges. They really depended on what I was trying to execute. So in your case, it sounds like a combination of all those tools would be necessary for you to access to solve whatever issue or reach whatever goal it is that you've determined. So maybe in the beginning, it's not so essential that you set essential boundaries for them, but just take a look at the whole scenario and then decide, well, what tools do I need to use here to get this family where they need to be? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, an artist could be a number of things. They could be a painter. They could be a sculptor. So in your case, a word that possibly encompasses more. So it's not those individual resources. They're part of your bigger picture that are available to you whenever you need to use them. So if you have a client family that's not coachable at that point, a coaching relationship would be ineffective. So
mm-hmm.
what would be a better tool to use for this particular group? So keep them at your fingertips.
Right.
Apply when necessary.
Right. And I think then the bigger question, which I've been to great therapists, child therapists, and lawyers, is to make sure that legally I'm protected. I'm only suggesting. I'm never prescribing. So I have to be very, very clear and knowledgeable and also contractually protected that I'm not overstepping any legal boundaries or guidelines.
Important, yes.
Yeah.
And important to have in writing, contractually, as
yeah.
you said. I agree totally. Great. Any other comment or input to Shelley or about this topic?
This is Sharon. I just have one, and especially with the comment about just now about tools, and as I was thinking about this, the big difference between a tool and what Shelley does is intuitive. First of all, the tools aren't concrete, and because they're abstract, use your intuition to know there aren't any hard rules. I mean, there could be some rules, but it sounds almost like you intuitively know what to say, when to say it, you know, literally what tool to use. Whereas when you're an artist doing, you know, where you have to choose which brush to use, yeah, there's some intuition that goes in there of, you know, learning to use the right one. But there are some rules, you know. I need this type of stroke. The rule of thumb is use this type of brush. I think with coaching and mentoring and, you know, all that, it's much more intuitive, and so it does become more difficult to distinguish one tool from another.
And that's an important point, and I think the question and what the comments, the clarity that's developed around this is that of establishing the framework. And I think the things that Kay contributed were about framing it, and framing it specifically, because then what occurs within that framework makes sense, and it's part of a flow, part of a context. Then you can be in the mindset to be really having access to all of your intuition, all of the principles that apply. Because when you think about it, there are very few things in life that are black and white, that are rules. But you have to have the rules in place. You know, think about watch an NBA game. There's only about maybe 5%, 10% of the game that occurs around the boundaries, the rules, the out of bounds, the, you know, the technicality. But those have to be in place in order for free play to occur. And everything else that occurs then can play and occur and unfold within those boundaries with the principles that are there. And then it becomes jazz, the analogy of intuition. So the framework, I think, is something really interesting that we've just talked about and defined. I want to save our last few minutes before our guest comes to get from each of you the one, just in a very succinct way, the one best thing you've taken away today and one sentence about an action plan you commit to before next meeting. Who wants to start? Would it be easier for you to volunteer, or would you like me to call on you?
I'll volunteer.
Go for it.
Okay, this is Shelley. What I've taken away today is that this is like art, and that we need the framework and the rules, and then we can create infinite possibilities. And what I would like to do between now and next time is I would like to write my article for my supervision site about if and what and how a family facilitation coach can help your family.
Terrific. Got that. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Lisa.
Hi, this is Sharon. I'll go next.
Lisa, I heard first and then Sharon.
Okay. This group is excellent in helping each of us evolve toward a direction. We have some really smart attendees on the phone. I'm very happy to be among you all, so a quick footnote. And then what I'm going to do between now and then is I'm sticking with my impression management direction, which was actually in place before. I just gave it a name. And I'll let you all know by next class what happens with the league, the hockey league, where I will relate the impression management right into the performance piece of these athletes. And so today's guest speaker couldn't be more well-timed for us.
Terrific. I agree with you about the group. My best hope is that I don't get voted out of the group. So thanks very much, Lisa. Sharon, you're next.
Okay. Well, what I take from the group is just listening to the different perspectives, it just keeps reminding me of how valuable it is to just shut up and listen. It's just amazing, and I'm so thankful to be in the group and to have access to a group like this, because everybody is so positive and so thoughtful, considerate, respectful, and diverse. The ideas are so diverse that it's very inspiring. And my goals that I'm going to share, I have two goals this time. One is to learn how to use Twitter. I have an account, but I really need to learn how to use it, specifically learning how to create private microblogging systems so that I can hold classes using Twitter as a means of communication, but having it be private. So I'm actually, after this session, I'm going to send an email out requesting one or two volunteers to help me in testing that, because I've tried testing it myself with a couple of fake accounts I've created to test it, but it's just not working. I can still see everything. So I just am going to need a couple of volunteers just to play with Twitter with, you know, junk going back and forth just to see who can see what. And my other big thing is I've got an 8-week course break coming up later this month. And so my goal is before the next meeting, it's a pretty big goal because that only leaves me a couple of weeks, is to complete my literature review for my dissertation. And that's a pretty big step.
Terrific. Thank you very much. And that's my action plan, too, is to shut up and listen. So you got me down. Who's next?
Hey, Dave.
Hey, John. Let's do at a quarter till. We're doing our final wrap-up.
Go ahead, guys. I'm just sitting here. I'll listen.
Okay, super. Debbie, you ready to do yours?
Yes, I can do mine real quick. My takeaway is what a great resource this group is, and that I need to work on figuring out how to better utilize all these great minds and personalities. My action plan is to finalize my goal for last month on launching Queen Bee's Coaching, which is probably only 2 days of work away, and to finalize my list of coaching offerings. That's all.
Perfect. Thank you. Yana.
Yes. So I would like to say what I really like is it's the grain minds together, and a wonderful energy, really good feeling about all this group, and everybody has contribution, you know, like tremendous contribution to bring to this group. And for the future, I will focus on developing my brand, You Successful You, and writing, you know, successful stories for others and me as well, and the Kids Project.
And the Kids Project, okay, great.
Yeah. All right, that's thanks. Always on that table.
Great, got that down.
Yes, thank you.
Is Kay still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Are you ready?
My takeaway that there are many different approaches to get to a great outcome, and it's really all about what works for you and what works for your clients, and it'll be different. What I am going to do when I leave here, I want to start a conversation for a lead that I picked up yesterday from an event I spoke at for Strengths Within All Girls. There was a regional school district of about 17 schools that came together to start SWAG groups, Strengths Within All Girls groups within each school. And there were some teachers who came up to me after, and I want to get a group of teachers and guidance counselors together for coaching. So I want to follow up on that lead by the next time.
Great. Super, thank you. And Carolina. Is the unmuted Carolina still with us? Okay, well, any final words or comments before we wrap up? And I want to introduce a very special guest as soon as we're ready. Any other words or comments before we bring it into this?
Hi, Dave. I haven't done mine yet. This is Deb.
I'm sorry, I missed you. Yes, Deb, go ahead.
All right. First of all, I've been very impressed today with our meeting. Everybody has been very articulate in presenting and outlining solutions to our problems that we went over. My takeaway today, I think I'm going to just build under my name. I thought that was a great idea. My action plan is going to be to finish those blogs, get them up and running. I'm going to create a written business plan with my end result and an action plan, you know, for the financial aspects of my business. And one thing that I would mention for Shelley is, she's probably heard of Dr. Pat Allen out there in Santa Monica. I would say check out her system that she uses for communicating effectively with respect. I use that a lot.
Who was it? I'm sorry.
Dr. Pat Allen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's interesting.
She's very interesting, and I've applied her theories in all my relationships, and I've seen 100% increase in my relationships as far as low stress and effective communication. I really swear by her.
Yeah. Yeah, she's very direct, too. I love her. Thank you for reminding me.
No problem.
Thanks, Deb, and good luck and congratulations on selling your very successful business and moving more fully into coaching. That's exciting stuff, both of them.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks very, very much for a really inspiring and highly contributory wisdom of the group from each of you. I'm really excited about sharing this next guy with you. John Wright is CEO and former managing partner of the Wright Financial Group. His financial network is one of the highest rated and finest financial services firms in the world, and John has worked and he's grown his office from $750 million to over $9 billion of insurance in force and manages over $1 billion of assets. He's a huge leader in this industry. Now that I have your attention, he's also a performance coach for professional athletes and corporate athletes outside of his home firm of Northwestern Mutual. He was voted top speaker in the NFL National Rookie Symposium 6 times. He's spoken to or facilitated life skills camps to a number of pro football teams, the Indianapolis Colts, the Chicago Bears, Baltimore Ravens, Denver Broncos, the Packers, Cleveland Browns, Atlanta Falcons, and the Tennessee Titans. His Grayfield Estates has become a learning and training center for a multitude of hugely successful people, CEOs of Fortune 100 companies, NFL Hall of Famers, Super Bowl champions, NFL and NBA All-Pros, world-famous authors, plus, and this is the one that gives me hope, wonderful everyday folks. And the reason it gives me hope is in a couple of weeks I'm going to be there at his camp, and I'm really looking forward to that. Now, personally, John was All-State All-American, Academic All-American, and drafted in the second round and had a pro football career before his illustrious career in finance and now in coaching. So, John, it's a privilege and it's a pleasure to have you here. Welcome, man.
Thanks, Dave. You know how excited I am. Ladies, I've never shaken Dave's hand, but I feel he's like a mentor of mine. I feel he's a friend of mine, and we've talked many times on the phone. I've listened to some of his work over and over and over, and so this is a joy for me to get to talk to some people that are very special to him. And then, like I said, in a couple of weeks, he's going to be at my home, which we call Grayfield, and I don't know whether he's going to be a co-facilitator, whether he's going to – we'll decide what he's going to do when he gets there. But it's a pleasure for me to be with you, Dave.
I've been working out like hell just to hope to get through it, because I know some of these guys I'm going to be shoulder to shoulder with are all pro whatever. So I'm just scared and working and hitting the streets and the gym to get ready for it.
That may be a good move. That may be a good move.
Yeah.
Well, so what I think we have here is we have a group of, looks like, very successful, all women. I think that's correct, correct?
Yes. You and I are the token males.
The token males. And they are all involved in coaching. Would that be correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I'd like to start, I wrote some notes down what I would like to get accomplished today. And any of you want to chime in anytime. I'd like to make this as interactive as possible. But I'm talking to a bunch of, if you're coaching, that means you're a leader. And I have been very successful in the leadership world. And I want to make it real crystal clear that it wouldn't make any difference if I were talking to a group of road construction workers. We all lead the most difficult person in the world to lead. And who is that? Anybody can answer that.
Ourselves.
Who is that? That's ourselves. Exactly. So the first, I thought I would be spending some time with you just talking about what some of my philosophies and some of the things that I touch on about leading ourselves. Because I think it's pretty difficult to lead others if we're not doing an adequate job of leading ourselves. So I want to start with a metaphor. And I want you to picture in your mind. Now, you all know what the yellow Jeep is, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Does everybody know what the yellow Jeep is?
Yes.
You don't? Is there anyone here that doesn't have a clear picture?
I do not. This is Debbie. I do not.
All right, Debbie. Well, have you listened to Dave's? Dave, that was used in what, your money story?
Yes.
Is it the analogy of the yellow Jeep and the training? Have you said,
yeah.
Don't think of a yellow? Okay, yes, I do know.
Okay, I want you to, we're not going to talk about a yellow Jeep. I want you to picture in your mind, because I normally do this with the audience in front of an audience, but I want you to picture in your mind as vividly as you can, brand new, a box, maybe two or one, brand new candles. Can you picture that? You all have that?
Mm-hmm.
Brand new candles. So you've got a box of brand new candles, And most of the candles that I open are wrapped normally. They're not wrapped in the form which we wrap things, which you need a blowtorch or a sledgehammer to get them opened with the plastic around them. I don't know if any of you have that same thing that bugs me a little bit. I had two fishing lures the other day. I couldn't get them open. I had to put them on the bottom of my boat and crush them with my foot. But these candles are wrapped. So you're going to unwrap the candle, and you've got two beautiful candlesticks, and you're going to put those candlesticks in the candle holder, and then you're going to light. You can see all the candles. You see the candles there? What color are most of your candles?
Red and white.
White?
Red and white.
Do we have any colors other than white?
No, I said red and white. Red and white.
Uh-huh. Like a Christmas candle. All right. So we've got the candles. We're looking at them closely, and now we're going to light them. And whatever you vision yourself, you either use a power match or you're going to use a match. You're going to light that candle, and you're going to see the flame, and you're going to have to hold, because they're new candles, you're going to have to hold it on that wick for a second to get it going. And now your two candles are lit in front of you. Can you see them?
Mm-hmm.
Clearly?
Yes.
You feel like that yellow Jeep? Can you see those candles? They're burning, and hopefully they're a drip-free candle, so you're not losing a lot of wax quickly. You got them? Do you all see those candles?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. You are looking at the original Home Entertainment Center. You are looking at an energy force that has been probably the most phenomenal energy source in our solar system. If we would lose the big candle in the sky, we're all going to be dead in about 48 hours. That flame, that fire that you're looking at, has produced, other than just if man's been on Earth for how many millions of years, it's been the last 40. That hasn't been the thing that we sat around to talk about family. That hasn't been the thing that's protected us. That hasn't been the force that's given us heat. That hasn't been the force that we cooked our food. Fire is an amazing energy source. Now, what I want you to take from this is I want you to think about the last time when you fell in love. Whether you fell in love with your husband or whether you fell in love with a career or whether you fell in love, that spark, that ignition of just passion and energy and love and warmth and burning desire. That's what fire represents to me. Are you all with me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But unfortunately, we live in a world today that loves to think of fire as a gas log. And fire has to be tended. And why there's a 50% divorce rate in this world today is because we have, you know, my daughter is getting married for the second time here in a couple weeks, and we are so excited about that. But we live in a world today that believes we don't have to tend the fire.
Mm-hmm.
We coach people every day to think that there's an automatic, and I'm not against automatic gas logs, although we don't have any in our home, but, you know, the gas log industry is just fine with me. But I want you to really grasp this concept of that we have to tend the fire, because everything through longevity tends to get off course, and that's why you'll never be out of a job. Because, well, I mean, Billy Currington's song, God is great, beer is good, people are crazy. We all have an essence of craziness in us. And we all have let great things go in our lives because we stopped tending the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I started using this about 4 months ago, and I love doing it with audiences because, and I've had people come up to me and say, you know, I love that analogy. And, you know, the day that you start to take your foot off the gas pedal, you know, we're either green or growing or we're ripe and rotting. We're either busy living or we're busy dying. And the day we think we do not have to tend the fire is the day we are starting to become ripe and rotting, is the day that we're starting to become, is we're starting to die. And your job with yourself, your job with your life is to tend the fire. And your job with your people that you coach, the people that you coach and you teach and you work with to be better. Good coaches make people better. Great coaches make people better than they think they can be. You know, we take the lid off on great coaching. So that's the first thing I wanted to just start with. I wanted to start with that fire, and I may come back to that. My guess is that I'm talking to 10 women. And my guess is that the vast majority of you, and even if it may be 100% of you, sometime in your life, I mean, I know we have, I guess we have a world-class athlete in this group, but of all 10 of you, probably every one of you sometime in your life was involved in something competitive, whether it was as a grade schooler, whether it was soccer or volleyball or basketball or band or a thespian or acting or whatever. And I'm going to assume that's the case. And if that is the case, you learned a great lesson in those early formidable times in your lives, and or whether regardless of how long they went, you learned a great lesson, three great lessons that you should be able to bring to the table today in your work with people, helping people get better. One is you learn teamwork. And how many of you have all of you read Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Well, my suggestion is read it again. I find it interesting. I find it, that's a coaching point, but I find it interesting that if I was in front of you of an audience, and unfortunately we can't do this, but if I say, okay, everybody's read the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Great. And I pull a $100 bill out of my pocket, and I say, okay, there's $100 for anybody that can come up here and recite the seven habits in order, verbatim. Now, I've shared that with over 100,000 people. I've had three people ever do that. One was my granddaughter. One was another business, and then the other two were business people. But my point is this. There are so many phenomenal books out there that can help us be better. But the mistake I think people make is they read one, they say, oh, I love that. I love that. And then I'm going to read another one. John Maxwell has written probably 25 books on leadership. They all say the exact same thing. That's not a hit on John Maxwell, but, you know, they all say the same thing. You know, pick one and read it. Don't read it. Don't read great books. Study them. Make them a textbook. Highlight them. Write all over the book. And read it again and again and again. Then you'll become a master at whatever you're trying to do. Does that make sense? So
yeah.
Stephen Covey said that synergy, the number six habit, that's the miracle habit. Because that's the habit of the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. That's the habit, what is a miracle when you guys, and I use guys, I just like the word guys, but when you guys touch people's lives. Because now there's two of you. Now you're helping somebody get through a tough situation. You're helping somebody feel better. You're helping somebody, whatever it is you help them do. So number one, you understand teamwork better. Number two, you learn to compete. You learn to get knocked down and you got to get back up. And you get knocked down again, and you got to get back up. And that learning to compete is a great gift. And then number three, and I think this is the thing that is so, well, they're all just as important, but number three is when the game is over, the first question you're asking yourself is what's next? Is what's next? You know, I played in the NFL. Nick Saban, I was going to say I played in the NFL, so I have no memory. But I do remember Nick Saban. Nick Saban has won three national championships in a row. After they beat the bejesus out of Notre Dame this year, 24 hours after they beat Notre Dame, they were having a meeting with the players that are going to be back for the next season, and he was challenging their will. You know, he let them celebrate for 24 hours. I guess it was 48 hours. He let them celebrate for 2 days, and then in a team meeting saying, you know what, what's next? I mean, what's next? That's the heart of a champion. You know, we want to do well. We want to do well in life. We want to do well, but you know what? As soon as that's over, we need to be asking ourselves, what's next? So whenever I talk, and this really isn't a speech, but since I'm talking to you, I wanted to at least put this in. The other thing, and I played a lot of sports, but I played football in grade school. I played football in junior high. I played football in high school. I played football in college, and I played football in the NFL. And another thing that I learned in sports that I think we need to practice every day is the pre-performance ritual. Okay. Too many people go into something that's important to them in their life, and they don't have a pre-performance ritual. Mm-hmm. I hope you understand that pre-performance ritual is the game before the game, playing it in your mind. Mm-hmm. And I have done pre-performance. I've been married for 45 years. I don't just walk into the house. I don't get home, and I'm ready to walk into the house and see my bride. I don't just walk into the house and not have thought about how I'm going to see her. I have a pre-performance ritual. I find her. I give her a kiss. You know, I just don't walk. I tend the fire. I tend that fire. I have a pre-performance ritual when I get out of bed. You know, I'm 67 years old. I'm a professional athlete. You can get hurt getting out of bed. You know, I just don't roll out of bed quickly. I think about it, and I say, okay, here we go. We're going to get out of bed. Boom. Now, I'm in great shape, I have missed 3 days of working out this year. But I have a pre-performance ritual. I have a pre-performance ritual when I get – I have a horse. I ride a lot of horses. I have a 17.1-hand horse. And a 17.1-hand horse is a tall horse. When I get up, when I'm thinking about mounting that horse, I have a little pre-performance ritual. I stretch one groin, I stretch the other groin, I work my back. Now I'm ready to climb up on that big son of a gun. And I also have a pre-performance ritual when I speak. And I'm going to share that with you right now. Because I've spoken to audiences all over the world, and this is my speaking pre-performance ritual. So here we go. Oh, God. As I walk through the speaker's valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for thou art with me. Help me use the special talents and gifts that you've blessed me with to be all that I can be this afternoon, so that the women in this room or the women in this world that are listening to this, the women in this room who commit their lives to saving the lifestyles of their clients, the women in this room who every day help people choose the harder right instead of the easier wrong, and are never content with a half-truth when the whole truth can be one, can hear my words and use them to use the special talents and gifts you've blessed them with to be all they can be. Amen.
Mm-hmm.
All right. With that said, I did use in that prayer, hear my words, and I invented a word. It's an acronym. It's the word is PGOW, P-G-O-W. And I'm assuming you're all taking notes. And I would say the first thing you ever want to work with your clients on is remind them that champions take copious notes. I get on audiences. When I get in front of an audience, and I see 100 people or 300 people or 5,000 people, and they're out there with no notepads. You know, you just understand. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you do speaking. I'm sure you understand. You know what? They're not going to get much out of this. So anyway, I invented a word called PGOW, P-G-O-W, powerful group of words. And it's the PGOW. It's got some punch to it. And here's a PGOW that I love. For the strength of the pack is the wolf, and the strength of the wolf is the pack. Now, if you're ever working with any CEO, any person that owns the company, what do they want to have happen with their company? What's their goal? Anybody?
Success.
Successful. Wow. What does that mean, successful? What do they want to have happen to that company? They want to have it do what?
Growth.
Yes, they want to have it grow. They want to have it grow and prosper. Dave Kruger, he wants you guys to grow and prosper.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way that the pack So the strength of the pack is the wolf, and the strength of the wolf is the pack. That's this Pagal from Rudyard Kipling. The only way we can make the pack stronger is how? But the only way we can make the pack stronger? I'll turn off my phone.
Work together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, work together, but yeah, but what's the only way the pack gets stronger? What do we have to work with?
Focus.
The wolves. Exactly. The wolves. So today is the day. Today is the day. I'm not working with the pack today. I'm working with the wolves. And my goal today is to, and this is going to happen. I've got some good news and some bad news about my goal today. My goal today is my goal is today to touch you in a deep and meaningful way, but the good news is I'm going to give you something that will dramatically affect your life positively for the rest of your life. That's the good news. You know what the bad news is?
What?
You've heard it before. You've heard it before a number of times. David has shared this with you before. You've heard it before from your mentors and your coaches. But have you really paid attention to it? Because the people that you're talking to have heard everything you've told them, but they haven't acted. You know, we all know how to live a perfect life. The problem isn't knowing, it's doing. It's doing. So I thought I'd do this little exercise with you. I'm assuming you've all got bad paper in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got an 8.5 by 11 inch paper in front of you, I want you to on the left side, down at the bottom, about an inch from the bottom of that paper, write your present life. Your present life, present, life. Here's where you are today. Here's where your coaching clients are today. Here's where all the people that you work with are today. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
And what this is, and there's a guy named Stephen Pressfield, and he wrote a book, The War of Art. Not The Art of War, which is a very famous book. He called his book The War of Art. And he says that we all have two lives that we live. The life we live and our unlived life within.
Mm.
And what separates the two is resistance. Now,
yeah.
I've taken that concept, and I've expanded it somewhat. So we're going to draw a graphic right now. So down at the bottom left-hand corner, we've got your present life. We all have two lives, the life we're living. This is the life you live. Up at the top right, I want you to write your unlived life. Or you can write your most amazing future. Or you can write whatever it is you want, whatever your dreams are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to write them. I just want you to write either your unlived life, dreams, or amazing future, or all three of them. So now at the bottom left of the page, we've got present life. Top right of the page, we've got your unlived life. Okay? Now, in the middle of the page, I want you to make a wavy line, and that's the river of resistance. So if I were sitting next to any of you ladies in an airplane, and we're rapping about life, and I ask what you do, and then you ask me what I do, here's what I'd tell you I do. I'd say, you know, most of us have two lives we live, the life we live and our unlived life within. And what separates those two is resistance. And incidentally, Pressfield says, if you believe in God, and this is a quote of Pressfield, and I certainly do, and I, John Wright, certainly do, but he said, if you believe in God, you feel that resistance is the most evil force on earth because it keeps us from using the gifts that God gave us. Now, isn't that so? Well, let's go on. So what I say is what I do is I help people build a bridge to their unlived life over the river of resistance. Now, that sounds kind of corny, but that is exactly what I do. That is exactly what Dave Kruger does. That is exactly what you guys do when you work with your clients.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have issues. They all have issues. And they do not want, you know, whatever that amazing life or that unlived life is. And it's interesting. The camp that Dave's coming to is, I do these camps at my home. We have a rather interesting facility. We have 80 acres. I live on 80 acres. We have a high ropes challenge course. I'm assuming you know what that is. It's kind of like the Marines. You know, they're you put the people through very dangerous things. We're really looking forward to challenge Dave on this high ropes course. And I know he's excited about it. He's really excited about it. We have a world-class shooting facility. We teach people how to shoot. We have a little nine-hole golf course. We do a lot of interesting things at this at our little camps. And when I have a bunch of campers coming in, I ask them, I share this unlived life with them, and I ask them, I want you to think about what your unlived life is. I want you to think about that. Because I think one of the problems we have in life today in America is we don't think enough. We don't think enough. We've got this phenomenal mind that we don't even understand, you know, one fraction of its gifts. We've got this phenomenal mind, and we don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't. I'm blessed that, you know, I'm 67 years old. I retired from the financial business, but I'm very active. But I'm blessed that I get to spend 30 to 40 minutes a day sitting in a special chair with some music, just thinking, just letting my mind roll. So I asked these, in this camp that Dave's coming to, these are seven guys from New York City. The oldest is 38 years old. The youngest is 30. The smallest income is about $7 million. The biggest income is probably $45 million. These are Wall Street guys. They're in the high-end world of financial, the big-time guys. And you'd almost think that, you know what, do these guys have an unlived life? I mean, they've got all the toys. They've got all the touches. They've got all the financial clout that they could, you know, not that they could have, but you'd think, what would they possibly want? Now, I think you probably know where I'm going. Those people all have an unlived life. Maybe their unlived life is to have a better marriage. Maybe their unlived life is to be in better health, because you know you give up a lot when you work that hard to make that kind of money. So anyway, so we're going to build a bridge. We're going to build the bridge to this unlived life. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the river. You've got up at the top. You've got amazing life. At the bottom, your unlived life. At the bottom, you've got your present life. And we've got the river going across the middle of the page. And now we're going to build a bridge from your present life to your unlived life. And there's two. You can do it any way you want. And incidentally, let me give you my email. My email is jwwillini@aol.com. And that's the Fighting Illini, as in the University of Illinois. And so jwwillini@aol.com. My cell number is 217-840-0123. If you want to talk to me about this, you know, Dave's very special to me, which makes, even though you're not, I don't know you, but yet because Dave's special to me, that makes you special to me. I have no problem with you emailing me or calling me, and I'll go over this so that you make sure you really understand it and you can see the graphic. But the two main pillars for people to get from their present life to their unlived life, the one, first one is your habits and rituals. Your habits and rituals. And I mean, I could go into great detail on this. Dave, let's just for a second. Let's see, I started about, where are we time-wise?
You have, however you'd like to use it, 17 more minutes till half past. So however you want to use it.
All right, well, let me finish this, and then I'd like to have, I would like to have some questions. This habits and rituals thing is a huge deal. I'm sure Dave's got statistic after statistic, and I've got statistic after statistic, but how human beings, you know, our minds, homeostasis, and you probably heard this from Dave, you know, our minds just fight us all the time to not change. And so the people that we work with, that we coach, we gotta get them to change. So we have to look at their habits and rituals. And, you know, human beings, you know, 50% of heart attack victims. When they go to the doctor, they're a heart attack victim, they've had a heart attack, the doctor says, here's what you need to do, yada, yada, yada. 50% don't follow at all their doctor's prescribed lifestyle change. And maybe it's more than that. And I love, you know, if you've heard the your new money story, 80% of the lottery winners in the United States file for bankruptcy 5 years after they've won them, because their money changed, but their money story didn't change, and their money story is habits and rituals. So we've got to work hard with people on changing their habits and rituals. The other big pillar that goes across there is we need a coach. Everybody needs a coach. So we've got two main girders that build our bridge across this river of resistance. One is habits and rituals, and two is having a coach. Obviously. Now, when I mean a coach, I don't necessarily mean a coach like you or I that we're paid to help people. I mean, it could be anybody. It could be anybody in your organization. It could be, but it needs to be a special person that you feel accountable to. But obviously, it could be somebody like us that is actually paid to help people make the changes. And then in the middle of this, I guess I should tell you what's in the river. Let me tell you what's in the river. The river is filled, well, first of all, it's got a very, very fast current. And a lot of people think they can just drive across the river. They can just get out there and just walk across the river or drive across the river to their unlived life. Well, there is no way that's going to happen. There's a mountain of cars and people at the bottom of that river that thought they could just walk across. There's turtles in the river. And the turtles are... They're slow. They don't want you to go anywhere. They tell you, hey, get on my back. I'll take you across the river. They don't want you to go anywhere. Our life is filled with a bunch of turtles that try to damper our desire to get across that river. There's mermaids in the river. And I guess there's mermen in the river. Let's use my daughter as an example. You know, her ex-husband got involved with a mermaid. And, you know, it came close to ruining her life. And, so that's a big, big problem. In the professional athletic world, mermaids are a huge distraction for this, a lot of the professional athletes that I know. So that can be a problem. But the biggest problem in the river are the sharks. And the sharks represent fear. The fear that holds us back, the fear that keeps us from being all we can be. And, you know, if we can deal with that, I mean, I love this thought. What could you accomplish if you had no fear? And one of the reasons that the first thing we do when we have people to our house for our home for a camp is we have them do this high ropes course, because I want them to understand in their mind how their mind closes, how their mind restricts and compresses their gift with fear. So we've got the river, we've got the one girder across it, which is habits and rituals, we've got the other girder across it that's coach, and then there's four little things that connect those two. The first one is why. If one of you ladies called me and said, I want you to coach me, I'm assuming if somebody calls you and says that, I'm assuming the first question you ask is, why? What is it you want me to do for you? What is it you want to get out of a coaching relationship? And that's very, very important to really hone down on that. Because if that why isn't there, it's not going to happen. The second one is what? And that's really easy. You know, everybody, we can all tell people what they have to do to be better. That's the easiest one. The third one is, do they need this? And the fourth one is, do they want it? And I we can all say that everybody needs this, needs this, needs this, but until a person understands they need it, and then when they say, I want to make the change, then that's a different deal. Let me throw one other thing out, and then we can see if there's any questions. If there's no questions, if you want. somebody comes to you, if somebody comes to me and wants me to work with them, now I have a very limited, amount of people. I work with 12 people, and I don't want more than 12 people. I could work with 100 people if I wanted to, but I have, you know, a wife of 45 years. I have two kids that I spend a lot of time with. I have 8 grandchildren. I have 9 dogs, and I have 3 horses, and I love life. And I'm financially independent, so, you know, I've just been blessed. But, you know, I have had a son that had mental illness, and I've had a daughter that's been divorced. And so as blessed as my life has been, I think those two experiences alone have probably helped me coach people more than all the other great stuff that I've done. Mm-hmm. And in reading your resume, there's a lot of you that's listening to me that have had struggles. And you know what? Those struggles can be powerful things if you make them powerful things. So, let's see, where was I going with that? I should have put one of you in charge of when I was going with. Where was I going with that?
Did you coach 12 people?
I coached 12 people.
Uh-huh.
You
finished why, what, do you need this, and do you want this?
Yeah, you got that. Oh, well, maybe I wasn't going anywhere with that. See, when when I'm in the audience, I do. This is serious. Let me be serious. I do put somebody in charge of where I am. And then I'll come back to them and say, okay, now I got off track there because I get excited about stuff.
I think you said if we come to you.
Yes. Very. Who is that?
Shelley,
way to go, Shelley. Way to go, Shelley.
Yes. Thank you. I'm listening to you.
You're right on spot. If you come to me and ask me to coach, I'm going to ask you why. And then if you can really convince me, the first thing we're going to do with you is we got to do a time study. Now, I got this from Peter Drucker, probably one of the foremost management consultants in the world. And, you know, I was a professional athlete. I understand that, you know, in the athletic world, everything you do is filmed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every time you step on the practice field, you're filmed. Every time you step on the game, you're filmed. You're filmed. And you can't manage what you can't measure. So
mm-hmm.
I want to encourage you gals to do – are any of you doing a time study with your clients?
No.
You should be.
I'm doing one with myself.
Well, a time study is awesome. I mean, you're getting undressed in front of the mirror. A time study is tough. And, you know, how can you work on a person's life changes if you don't know what the family they're doing with their life? So I would suggest, it's really a tough assignment. But we, you know, I have a form that I send to my clients, and I said, if you want to work with me, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to do a time on it. Because 8760 is the most exciting, the most important number in your life, and that's the number of hours in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, if you could look and say, "Well, what am I doing? How much TV am I watching every day?"
Mm.
The average television is on in America 8 hours a day.
Crazy.
Now, sports don't count. You don't have to add that in. Sports don't count.
Good one.
And, you know, this time audit is very, very important. Well, we've got about 6 or 7 more minutes. I think I'll shut up and I'll let you right now ask me any questions you want to ask me. And if there's no questions, then I'll continue to go on.
I have a question. This is Shelley.
Okay. Shelley.
So
Shelley.
Where? Yeah.
Okay.
Shelley, who listens to you. Where is your facility?
My facility?
Where's...
Did I give you my website?
No.
Go to my website. I hear a couple of you just had a website redone. I had a buddy of mine. Basically, I have revenue that comes in three areas. I have these camps that we do. And we do 5 of these camps, 5 of these camps a year. This year we happen to do 7. I do a lot of speaking. You know, as a professional athlete, I've developed more leaders in the Northwestern Mutual than anybody in the history of the company, and people like to hear what I have to say about building leaders and developing leaders. So I do speaking, I do the camps, and I do coaching. I do these 12 people, and I just really do it. I do it for fun. I mean, I get paid. You know, I don't need the money. I take it, but I don't need it. And so my website, I just had a guy say, John, why don't you get somebody professional to redo your website? And I just did. And this, she's a woman in Colorado. You know, Dusty Meehan is her name. And it, well, you can look at it, but I love it. I mean, it's awesome. And so my website is www.grayfield, G-R-E-Y-F-I-E-L-D, legacies.com. And this has just happened in the last week. And so you can look at my website, but the answer to your question, Shelley, is my home is in St. Joseph, Illinois, which is basically Champaign, Illinois, right in the middle of the state. So we're 2 hours from Chicago, an hour and 15 minutes from Indy, two and a half hours from St. Louis.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
I'm going to look at the site. So we can imagine Dave there.
Now, with the youngest at the camp, 38, I just thought I was going to get, I thought I was in shape to run the Boston Marathon with my daughter, but John, I got to get off the phone and go work out right now.
No, you got 5 minutes.
Okay.
It's the power of the mind, Dave.
This is Debbie. I'm going to be looking at all your information. I apologize. I haven't been paying as close of attention as I should be. I'm at Pima Air Force Museum in Arizona.
Okay.
So, but I'll be reviewing all your stuff. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Any questions at all? Anything you want to bounce off me?
This is Lisa. When you talk about the time management, what exactly would you ask someone to list or
seven
for that measurement?
Seven. The only thing that's any good, Lisa, is a 7:24.
What?
The only thing the only kind of a time audit that's valuable is 7 days, 24 hours a day. And they
So you ask what they do and how they spend their time.
Exactly. Exactly, in 15-minute intervals. Now, you don't have to do it every 15 minutes. I mean, like, you know, I could say, okay, this morning, I got up at 5 o'clock, I read and thought until 6.
Mm-hmm.
Then at 6 mm-hmm. o'clock, I worked out, and that was 45 minutes. 6:45 to 7:15 was personal, you know, shower, 8 o'clock in the auto in the car, drove for 30 minutes. 8:30 to 9 breakfast, 9 to 12 auto trip car, did some phoning while driving. 12, you know, you do it like that. About every 2 or 3 hours. Now, if you're familiar with Covey. And if you want a time, I'll send you. If you say, John, send me the time audits that you use, and I'll send you a sheet that we use. And it's a time audit. There's like about 3 sheets per day. But I like Covey's. I like Covey's. Put first things first. Chapter 3 of his 7 habits, where he lists things as 1, urgent and important; 2, important, not urgent; 3. Urgent, not important, and 4, not urgent, not important. And see, all the great things in life are important, but they're not urgent. All the great things, is it important that I don't go into the house and kiss my wife and say hi? That's important. Is it urgent? Nope, I could kiss that off. Is it important that I do this? Yeah. Is it urgent? Nope, I could kiss it off. And so that's the way I do it. But, the key is, having something to talk about so that you can start to help change people's habits and rituals to get them to their unlived life.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't change what we're doing, we're going to be right where we are. We have to change. If we want to be someplace that we're not, we're going to have to change something. Mm-hmm. And that's tough. That's tough. You guys can all go. You guys can all tonight, those of you that are married or with somebody, just hop in on the other side of the bed tonight. Just say, I'm going to sleep over here tonight. And see what they think. What? Hey, it's not your side. It's my side. Change is tough. Isn't that right, Dave?
Oh, yeah.
John, this was absolutely spectacular. I totally enjoyed you, and I'm so grateful that you spent the time with the group. And I know, I hear, and I feel how much they enjoyed you and benefited
yes.
from you. It's spectacular. Thank you
wonderful.
So much.
Great, and you know what? You have no idea the influence you have on the people you lead. And if you look at something every day, look at that. You have no idea the influence you have on the people you lead. And it's been great being with you. And, Dave, I'll be seeing you soon, buddy.
All right.
That's great.
My question is, was that a threat?
Pardon?
My question is, was that a threat? I'll be seeing you soon.
Thank you so much, John. And thanks to all of you.
Thank you, John.
All right, guys. See ya. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Man, that hurt my ears.